Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, November the 18th, 2022, 13 minutes past the hour. Here, the last Friday before the big Turkey Day holiday. And what comes after Thanksgiving? Well, of course, that is Christmas. And one of the most beloved Christmas movies of all time is A Christmas Story. What a classic it was back in 1983. Of course, here in Ohio, we have a special place in our hearts for that particular movie with the Christmas Story house up in the Cleveland area. Well, guess what? A remake of this movie has been made 39 years later. A Christmas Story Christmas, available now on HBO Max. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones a gentleman who has worked with Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor, among many, many other great actors and actresses, and of course was a part of the original Christmas Story and the remake Christmas Story Christmas, Scott Schwartz. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. It's not a remake. It's a sequel. It's 39 years later. It's not a remake.
No, did I say remake? You're right. Sequel. It is a sequel.
Yes.
When you were approached with the idea, how did it come to you?
To do the new film?
Yes.
Oh, it was already, I mean, they had written it and everything else, and they decided finally that they wanted all the guys back. So they called us, and we all had to kind of do a little video audition, because they hadn't seen us in a while, and they thought maybe we turned into Buffaloes or something, but, you know, we did our auditions, and they offered us the movie.
Did you like the idea of the sequel when you read the script?
Yeah, it's got a lot of heart. It's got, I mean, it took 4 years to get done. You know, it's not like they just threw some piece of crap together, as in the past they had done on many things. This was taken not lightly, with a lot of care. And, you know, like I said, 4 years to get this thing done. And no, I think people are going to love it. It's very emotional. It's funny. You know, so people are laughing, crying, cheering. And that's really what you want out of really any film.
Without giving away too much of the movie for people who want to see it, what is the story of this sequel?
Ralphie is an aspiring writer. And he's in Chicago, and something happens, and he has to go home. So back to home in Indiana, where, you know, his family is, and his friends are, his childhood friends, and he comes home, and he's got to give his family the Christmas that he had. You know, that special Christmas.
When you have an iconic movie that has went along for nearly 40 years like this, is it tricky, even if the script is good, to come back and put this thing together and wait to see the final product and live up to the original version?
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, reality is I don't think you can ever live up to the original version. It's not a matter of living up to it. It's doing it credit. It's paying homage to it and not creating a piece of garbage, you know. As far as us, it was like, it's not easy to do this, but we're still young enough that we can do it. You know, you say 40 years to 39 years later, we were all kids. So now, even though, I mean, we are, you know, AARP age, we're not all a bunch of retirees. So you can still make a good quality film with the same characters because of, you know, the situation and the fact that, you know, we're not all, you know, in retirement homes, I guess you could say. We still got lives.
When a period like 39, 40 years passes, of course you lose cast members, and Darren McGavin, who was the old man, the father in the original version, was such a big part of that movie. Is it hard to go back and do it without him being a part of it?
Well, sure. It's Darren, it's Bob Clark, the director, it's Gene Shepherd. There's others, you know, big people that are gone, but of course, you know, my first day on the set, you know, all I could think about was Bob. You know, Bob and I were friends. And it was tough, you know, because even though it's a new movie and it's all these things, it doesn't make a difference. You're still doing Flick and Schwartz and Ralphie. And, you know, the brain works in mysterious ways, so it started playing games with me. And I was just thinking about Bob and how he would have dug this. You know, he would have dug being back on the set of the movie called A Christmas Story.
Now, it is interesting. I want to bring the only other issue with casting. A lot of people have asked this question. Is the mother is still in the movie, but Melinda Dillon, who originally played the mother in the original version back in 1983, is not portraying the mother in this version, and she is still with us. Was there any reason for that?
She is retired. She talked to Peter and said, hey, I put in my time, I'm done. She, you know, just, she's at that point in her life where she doesn't want to be on camera anymore. And you got to respect that. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, I know she's in her 80s, you know, so I mean, she's put in her time.
Is that a rarity? You know, I've talked to a lot of actors over the years, and you know, Betty White and Bea Arthur and Katherine Helmand and all these great actresses, they don't seem to ever want to stop. Is it rare for an actor to want to stop?
Everybody is different. Every person is different. You know, Gene Hackman's retired. You know, nobody says anything about him. He's been retired for several years now.
Sidney Poitier retired?
I think he's gone.
Well, he is gone now, yeah, but I think he did retire quite a bit before he left us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it does happen, and it is obviously an individual's choice.
It's sort of to each their own. You know, some people, it's not about the money. Some people, it's about the vanity. You know, they don't want people to see them as old people. They want people to remember them young and vibrant and gorgeous or handsome, whatever the case is. You know, everybody's different. But, I mean, listen, Melinda's wonderful and sweet. I adore her. Love her to death. If she wants to live out her remaining days of life retired on a beach somewhere, God bless her.
So it was definitely her choice not to do this movie.
Yes. Yeah, no, Peter called her. I know they spoke. She was like, no, dear, I'm just retired.
Was it hard to have a Julie Haggerty in that role? That character still there, but a different actress?
Oh, no. Once you see it and other people see it, Julie Haggerty, I mean, was just wonderful. She literally got out of hair and makeup, and I went, oh, my God. It was just incredible. And then she started doing the scenes and stuff, and, oh, she's just terrific. You know, she's seen the original. She knows who Melinda is. I'm sure they were friends, and, you know, along the way, she's wonderful in this. I mean, she really does take the mom role, make it her own. And yet, it's kind of like you go, oh, my goodness. When you see it, you'll understand. I mean, it was perfect casting, perfect everything. She's wonderful.
Well, I know a lot of people who love the original who just had watched the trailer for the new version, and or the sequel, I should say, and they thought it was Melinda. They thought she was in it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So no mishap there. Tell me about 1983. How did you get the role in the original?
Just audition. I had the easiest audition in the history of mankind. I was in New York, and Bob Clark called me in. He and I talked for a few minutes. It was about 2:30 in the afternoon, and he goes, "Hey, I missed lunch. You want to go have a hot dog?" Sure. So he went down and had a dirty water dog, as they call them, from the corner hot dog vendor. We talked. We went back upstairs. He said, "Scott, it was a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming in." That was it.
And you were in.
My dad and I walked up to my agent's office 7 blocks away. She said, "What did you do?" I told her exactly what I just said to you. We talked, got a hot dog, talked. I went in. She goes, "You did great. They, you know, Bob Clark called, you got the movie." That was it.
In 1983, what do you remember at that age, being basically a child?
No. I was, when we finished the Christmas Story, I was 3 months from 15.
Well, under 16 years of age, what do you remember about that?
Having fun, how cold it was. I mean, you know, the filmmaking process is just long and tedious. You just got to have patience. But, you know, I remember all of it.
Now,
you know, it was just fun.
Now, the character, Flick, how was that described to you, or how did you want to portray that character?
Bob Clark said to me, "Just be a natural kid. Just be a normal, natural kid and have fun." He says, "If you do something I don't like, I'll tell you." That was pretty much it. You know? And he kind of just read it, and he's a little bit of a smart ass. Okay, fine. You know? But fun. And I did it, and we see, you know, whatever I did, it worked. You know, Bob, when I did this stuff with the tongue and the flagpole, all it says in the script is Flick sticks tongue to pole. That's it. And the rest I just ad-libbed and improvised and came up with the rest of it. And Bob liked it, and then he said, "Give me more, give me more." So I went overboard, and he's like, "Nah, you did it right the first time. You keep doing it your way." Okay. That was it.
Now that scene, maybe the most famous scene in the movie, certainly one of the top few famous scenes in that movie, putting your tongue on the flagpole. Why do you think that has held up so well for 40 years? What is it about that scene?
About the scene? I mean, it's just kids being stupid. I mean, that's really what it is. It's just, you know, we're playing, you know, 10, 11, somewhere in there. And that's what they did back then because, you know, no internet, you know, no real big television of any kind. You know, TV doesn't come in until several years later, you know, in the 40s. But it's held up because the older generation lived through it, and they passed it down to their kids who passed it down to their kids. It's just, it's funny, and it's stupid, and it's like, what are you thinking? And but kids used to stick their tongues to railroad tracks way back in the day. You know, so it's just something that people, oh my God, and some people are mesmerized by it. Some people are horrified by it, you know. So I tell kids, don't do it. You know, if you want to try something like it, take an ice cube out of the refrigerator, out of the freezer, put it on your tongue, but make sure you got warm water with you. Go over to the sink and do it, and it'll get stuck, and then pour the warm water in, it'll melt the ice cube. You know, people, it's just fun.
Christmas movies come out every year. We see new Christmas movies. Hallmark now, of course, for the last couple decades, runs a whole month, and now even more than a month of Christmas movies. But there are few Christmas classics that get played every year, and ornaments are made, and products are made, and the home is visited here in Cleveland, Ohio. What was it about this movie that made it a classic?
It's a multi-generational film. People in their 60s, 70s, 80s can love it. People in their 20s, 30s, and 40s can love it. People in their teens can love it. It's a movie that people, it's just such a beloved film that people pass it down. You know, they pass it down to their kids, and then their kids get to see it, you know. We're at the third generation at some point here, you know. It's just a wonderful family movie that mom and dad and aunts and uncles and cousins and brothers and sisters and everybody can watch it, laugh, and enjoy. You know, there's not too many movies like that. They make a lot of Christmas movies, and they don't stick, as we say. They don't stick on the wall. They kind of get thrown on the wall, and they fall to the ground. And this one just stuck. You know, it's winning a lottery, basically.
When this movie came out in 1983, how was it received?
Medium, up the middle. There were some people who loved it, some people who didn't love it. You know, Gene Siskel from ABC loved the movie. And about a month or so after the film came out, I was in New York at a deli. Oh my God, the famous one, Carnegie. I was at Carnegie Deli. And I'm sitting there with my dad having lunch. And he came in to order a sandwich. He looked around, he saw me, and he comes over and he says, You were great. Christmas Story is just such a wonderful film. Congratulations. So there were people that loved it. There were people, it's okay. But they didn't put any money behind it. They didn't put any advertising behind it. It started in a whole whopping 400 theaters. Then it went to 800. Then it went to like 1,200. And then the big movies that had the big pushes came out, and all of our theaters were gone. So, you know, from there it went on to, as we say, VHS hell, and it sat there for, you know, over a decade, and luck lent a hand. Ted Turner was buying MGM's library for TBS and TNT, and one of the last few films that he bought was Christmas Story. And one of his, you know, the story when his assistant said it. She said, well, let's do a marathon. You know, we don't have very much money into this, and we'll get all our money back. You know, within a year or two. Okay. They tried it with It's a Wonderful Life. First year, good. Second year, went down. Wizard of Oz, first year, went. It was good. Second year, went down. Christmas Story, first year, was good. Second year, it went up. So they kept going. Third year, went up. Fourth year, went up. Now we're at 25 years of the marathon. And it's still going. It's a monster. You know, now you got both stations, TBS and TNT, running 24 hours. They would not do that unless people were watching it. Over 50 million homes watch this thing at some parts of the marathon. I mean, that's a monster. That really, truly is something that is special. Bob Clark, you know, loved it. You know, he was gone in 04, and Gene Shepard, he was gone in 99, I think he was gone. You know, it's a well-made film. You know, but there are people that just love it. There are people that don't love it, but there's not too many that don't love it, so that's good.
What would these people, especially Gene Shepard and Darren McGavin and certainly Bob, as you had mentioned, who did not live to see its huge popularity as it is now, what do you think they would have thought of this?
Oh, I think they would have loved it, you know. I mean, Darren, you know, from everything I was told, I only got to talk to him a couple times. He thought it was an adorable movie. You know, and I mean, this was Gene's life story. So the fact that it's done what it's done, he would have been, you know, blown away. There's no question. You know, and Bob, you know, it. I can't say it's the best thing that he did, but really it is the best thing that he did. You know, he did Children Don't Play with Dead Things. He did Black Christmas. He did Porky's. All these other different types of films. You know, Porky's has had a heck of a run. You know, I mean, they made another Black Christmas. And, you know, they're working on other things that Bob did that they're gonna do again. But, you know, when it's a family movie and it's something that people... literally all, you know, I was going to say all over the country, but there, we have fans in Germany and Australia and Canada and, you know, and China. They love this thing. It's just, it's something that just resonated inside people, in their minds, in their souls. I went, oh my God, I love this. You know, Bob would have loved this. There's no question. It is really done well, the new film. And of course, you know, the old one, nobody expected anything more than a small little movie. There's no big stars. There's no special effects. For it to have done what it's done, you shake your head and you go, unbelievable. That's it.
You know, it's very interesting, Scott, this week with the movie being released on HBO Max on November 17th, here the week before Thanksgiving. We in Ohio have a special feeling about this movie because the house is up in Cleveland, Ohio, and I've been there, and I think all people have been there. It's a great spot to visit, a big tourist attraction. But the house goes up for sale on Monday, very unexpectedly to people. It's still up for sale. The week that the new movie is released. Do you think that was just by happenstance?
Probably not. You know, from what I've been told by others, it was something that he'd been thinking about for a while. You know, we really have nothing to do with the house anymore. He's built his fan base and he's got his customers. You know, he does, you know, a lot of money on the internet site. People still come through the house. So, I mean, it's a moneymaker, you know. I kind of know approximately what he's selling it for. It ain't going to sell so fast. It's going to take somebody who's got a lot of money who wants to run this kind of business, you know, where your average customer is a $15 to $20 customer. They come, they see the house, then they buy something, okay, it's a $25 customer. You know, people with multi tens of millions or hundreds of millions, you know, they normally look for stuff that they can make a little bit more each and every day, but, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, yeah, I mean, we would love to have had a shot at it, you know, but at the money that he's looking for, you know, I doubt it. Well, but I understand why. You know, it makes a lot of money. It's a historical landmark. You know, and you know, you're not only buying the house, you're buying the business, you're buying the museum, you're buying the other houses on the block that he owns. It's a monster.
Absolutely. When you think of a place where people come to visit a house, is this a defining moment in your career? Is this the defining moment in your career, this movie, at this point?
How else can I say anything but yes? I mean, in Hammond, Indiana, the home of Gene Shepherd, they did a bronze statue of me, you know, which is forever. There's less than 30 celebrities who have, or actors, I should say, who have bronze statues in the world, and I'm one of them. So I can't say anything but really yes, it is what it is, you know. You know, I mean, the toy with Richard Pryor and Jackie Gleason, I mean, it was a big film for its time. And some people still love it, and some people don't, and that's just the way that is. But, you know, being Flick, it is what it is. I mean, I guess being known as something that's great and wonderful and fun and you smile, I guess that's better than being remembered as, you know, Charles Manson. So there you go.
That's exactly right. Now, in the new film, where is Flick? What is Flick's story in the new film?
Flick has taken over his dad's bar. His dad gave it to him, so he owns Flick's Tavern. So he's got a bar where, you know, the locals come and they have their drinks. You know, I mean, it was great because the way it was set up, and I had nothing to do with it, of course, set decoration, any of that kind of stuff. I had a friend in New Jersey who owned a bar as I was growing up, you know, in my early 20s. And it looks almost the same. And I sort of went, okay, but that bar started in, like, the 50s. You know, and this bar, we don't exactly know when Flick's dad started the bar. But it kind of has, it has that feeling of that 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, bar scene where just guys and women came and they just sat and had a beer or they had a drink and, you know, they played shuffleboard or pinball or whatever the place had.
Now, for those of us who have not seen the new film, and not to give away what happens in the new film, but is this it, or could there be more? Could these characters live on in a third film?
Oh no, they could live on. You know, I don't know about a third film. You know, there's been talk maybe a film. If this works, maybe a series. If this works, because you can develop other characters. You know, besides just the boys. You know, and mom and the. Because you've got Ralphie's kids, or, you know, they've got Ralphie's got two kids in the film. Scott Farkas has a couple of kids in the film. You know, it certainly can go on. There's no defining it's over moment.
With it just being released on HBO Max yesterday, what do you expect the success to be by the time this holiday season's over?
Who knows? Oh, my God, you know. With the amount of people that watch the first one, you know, I know that it's just HBO Max right now, but I think it starts on December 3rd on all the other things, Amazon Prime and, you know, whatever other pay services are out there. I know it's going to be on there. You know, we hope that people enjoy it as much as we enjoyed it. I mean, I've had conversations with other people in the cast, and we're all just really blown away with the quality of the film, you know, how they did it. There's the scene with Higbee's that is in, it looks like the original Higbee's. You know, Ralphie's house is rebuilt. We shot this thing in Bulgaria. You know, they rebuilt Ralphie's house and the whole block and the downtown area. You know, it was really, they took a lot of care in making this. It had to be done right or it wasn't going to get done. And, you know, like I said, you know, from all of us, we were just, you know, blown away by, you know, the quality of it, you know, the creative part of the film. Peter wrote the story with Nick Shank, the writer. The director was a fan. He's done other films, you know, Claycatus, it's like, okay. It was dealt with care and love. It wasn't just slopped together. And it shows on screen, there's no question.
40 minutes past the hour here at WGH Radio Time, chatting with Scott Schwartz, one of the stars of the new Christmas film, but a sequel to a Christmas classic. The new film, A Christmas Story Christmas, was released yesterday on HBO Max. Some further releases will be coming up. And, of course, it comes from the original movie, the 1983 classic, A Christmas Story, of course. And, of course, we all remember Scott from The Toy with two legends, Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor. We'd be remiss, Scott, if we didn't talk a little bit about The Toy here. You had two comedic giants, both gone now. What was the set like with Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor in the early 1980s?
Open season. I mean, you had two legends, two icons, but of course you had other legends and icons. Ned Beatty is on the film. Wilfred Hyde White, who was an actor since the 40s. Richard Donner was our director. Ray Stark was the producer. I mean, these are like Hall of Fame type people. And they kept it light. We weren't, you know, making, you know, Shakespeare, you know, and Richard was great. You know, not what people think. He wasn't always on and telling jokes and all that. Very studious, very quiet, reading books, underlining, you know, always wanted to expand his mind, as they say. And he and I got along great. You know, I had a kind of a personality that sort of matched his in a way that language didn't matter. My parents were not those kind of people, uppity, you know, stuffy people. Whatever Richard said, that's what came out of his mouth. No PC, no nothing. You know, the stuff that we shared today, you know, parents, kids, I don't even know, would go out of their minds because, you know, nothing was off the board. Everything was there. It was, you know, you talk about everything under the sun. Mr. Gleason, different duck. You know, he was older. He deserved respect. He commanded respect. And the first couple of weeks, you know, I mean, again, my personality and his, I was a Smokey and the Bandit fanatic. I know the whole movie backwards, forwards. I know every line of dialogue. And I do impressions, and I would do impressions of him, and he got a kick out of it. I was 4'10", I weighed 50 pounds. And I'm doing Buford T. Justice. And he laughed. He thought it was great. So both of them gave me a lot of advice. They would talk to me. I could ask any question I wanted, and they would answer. They treated me as a peer. They didn't treat me as a kid. And that really helped my development as far as being an actor, comedy, life, great life lessons, you know. I mean, there are things that both of them said to me that still resonate with me today. You know, I just think about, okay, this is what they said. Okay. You know, thank God I can remember it all.
When you look back on that film, these are legends. Big, big legends. We really
They're on Mount Rushmore. They're on Mount Rushmore comedy. There's no question.
And to have both of them in the same film, did they like that film? Did they like the idea of that film?
You know, at that point in time, you know, Gleason was just doing whatever people kind of threw at him. It was just paydays for him, you know. He just did whatever was thrown in front of him. He does Smokey and the Bandit. It kind of rejuvenated his career, you know. So he was just working. Richard, you know, the storyline came from a French film, Le Jouet, which is a toy. And while it's, at the time, there wasn't very much of, you know, oh my goodness, this movie is this and this movie is that. You know, they paid Richard a lot of money. He came there, I think, in the beginnings. You know, he wasn't sure where this thing was going to go, you know, or how exactly it would come out. But I think by the end of it, he loved it. I mean, he and I remained friends from the day I met him until the day he was gone. And that's very rare. You know, I was friends with both of them. To stay in touch and be so friendly with cast members from films. You know, I mean, I went over to Richard's house many times. I moved to California in 87, which was 5 years after we did the film. And he and I would hang out. Now you would go, well, how is this possible that, a black guy from Peoria, Illinois would hang out with a white Jewish kid from Jersey? You know, and much younger. But we had a blast. You know, we had fun. And he became, you know, my friend. And he was my muse, my mentor, my teacher. That is very rare in Hollywood. You know, everybody's always doing something and they move on to the next project and that's the end of that. And I didn't have those relationships with those guys. I had friendships and care and love. You know, I mean, I called, you know, Mr. Gleason became Dad and Pop. You know, and that was just very special, no question.
You know, if you would look at these two films, which came out in a very short period of time, the early 1980s, if you just looked at them on paper and you said, we have a movie here with Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor, and then we have a Christmas movie here, really no big stars. Probably the biggest star at that point was Darren McGavin in the movie. You would say the one that's going to be around 40 years from now is probably going to be the Jackie Gleason-Richard Pryor movie. Not so. How do you explain that?
You know, it's the content of the film. You know, the toy, it's the rich guy buying the black guy for his kid. And today, in today's world and society, it's not looked at quite the same way. And Christmas Story is just a beloved family movie that everybody watches, and it's just done that. You know, I've had people come up to me and say, oh my God, the toy this, the toy that, slavery and all this. I'm like, no, you don't get it. You're not getting what the film is. I've explained it. They're basically the same movie, but in different paths. You have a child, a kid, who wants the love and respect from his father. Rich and the Toy is the same thing. The father disregards the kid. And in Christmas Story, Peter wants the BB gun. And you've got the whole film and where it goes, and you've got the adventure and the whole thing. But then you get to the end, where in the toy, you know, I'm hugging Gleason and I love you and all that stuff. So it's the payoff. And in Christmas Story, Ralphie gets his BB gun. So it's the love, care, and respect from his father for his son. So in a strange way, it's almost the same movie. It's just how you get there. You know, why Christmas Story has gone to iconic status and in the Library of Congress and all, I couldn't tell you. All I can tell you is people love the film. You know, and at the end of the day, it's the audience who makes up why a movie sticks or not. The toy is still shown, you know, on cable. It's still out there. You know, they're just different movies.
When we look at both of these events that happened before the age of 20 for you, the Christmas Story, A Christmas Story, which you say is the definitive role of your career, and The Toy with two comedic legends who you became lifelong friends with, after the age of 20, how hard is it to top that, to try to even be on par with that?
Listen, it's impossible because, you know, again, The Toy for me was a monster. It opened up so many doors to different people. And Richard was, you know, beyond gracious and wonderful to me and introduced me to people and took me to other sets to meet other, you know, movie stars. I mean, he took me to the set of Coming to America so I could meet Eddie Murphy and Arsenio and John Amos and James Earl Jones and all, because they were his friends. You know, it's hard to say, you know, oh, well, I'm just going to do something else that's going to become iconic. It's impossible. You know, there is no actor that looks at a role and says, oh, my God, in 20, 30, 40 years, this is going to be the one. You know, Tom Hanks, you know, Forrest Gump. He may have a ton of movies, but Gump is that iconic role. You know, Philadelphia is great, and every other movie he's done, he's wonderful. The new Elvis, you know, I thought he was great as the Colonel. There are people that liked him, people that didn't like him. To have a statue erected, you know, that cost, you know, people 60, 70, 80,000, whatever it was, to be etched in bronze for your life and your legacy, you know, would I have ever thought that? I'm just a kid from Jersey. You know, I got lucky. I did some roles, and I got some good movies, and, you know, you just have to put it in its place. At the end of the day, I still pay $3 for a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts like everybody else. But it's wonderful to know I left something behind that people can smile at, you know, and have a good memory, and I watched this with my dad, and he's gone already 10 years, but I loved it, and he loved it. You know, it's, you become a part of people's lives. You know, get invited to people's homes for, you know, oh, are you free on Thanksgiving? We'll have you over for dinner. You know, if you're going to be in town, come on over. My mom wants to meet you. My dad wants to meet you. Grandma, grandpa, you know, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, kids, whoever it is. You know, it's beyond understanding at this point, you know.
Being that the new movie, A Christmas Story Christmas, is attached to that iconic film, and one of those two that were so big in your early career, where does this movie place, this new movie, with all the attention that it is getting?
Listen, it's going to be right up there, because I think people will truly love it, and I mean, I'm proud to be in it. I'm proud of the work that I did. You know, we are our own worst critic, as we say in showbiz, or in life. And, you know, getting text messages from Peter, from, you know, Ralphie, dude, you did a great job, fantastic, thank you. And I talked to Zach Ward, who played Scott Farkas the Bully, who I love in this film, and he's like, dude, you killed it. You were like De Niro-esque. I mean, you made it your own and all this stuff. And I'm going, yeah, but you were great because of this, this, and this. You know, It's up there. There's no question. It's going to add to the Christmas Story legacy, and it should live on. There's no question. It was really, really well done. And, you know, I'm honored and proud that they gave me a shot, and they said, absolutely, you're still you. That's what the director told me when he watched my audition tape. He said, I watched you talk to the camera, say your name and all that. Then I started reading a scene. He goes, I watched 15 seconds. He said, I looked at your face, your mannerisms, you're still that guy. I'm like, yeah. You know, so it's a nice feeling to know that you've impacted people's lives so much, and it'll be fun. You know, the journey of life goes up and down, and very rarely do you get a shot at doing something, a role again, that is so beloved, and do it in a way that people just go, oh my God, this is great. You know, I mean, my social media lit up yesterday. My text messages were off the charts. People watching going, oh my God, I love this. This is great. You know, people laughing, people cheering, people crying. It's very humbling. It's very wonderful. You know, I expect it to be shown back to back with the original for many, many years to come.
Do you have a favorite piece of dialogue from the original movie?
You know, it's funny. Most people say I triple dog dare you, but I didn't say that, actually. Schwartz, the other kid, says it to me. You know, not really. I've got little blips here and there. You know, but now I say I triple dog dare you in the new film. So now it's kind of going to become, you know, mine and Schwartz's. And R.D. Robb and played Schwartz.
It's very interesting. When you have a scene, as we talked about in the first movie, which is seen 24 times during the marathons every year now, it has been seen millions of times through VHS, original movie releases, you putting your tongue on that flagpole. Going into this movie, how do you even come close to that or top that going in?
Well, you don't try to top it. You just try to do something that people will enjoy, and you try and do something that's good quality. And, you know, having the shot this time to go back at Schwartz all these years later, you know, it's great. You know, it was something that had to be there because fans want their payoffs, as we call it. They want to cheer. They want to howl. They want to applaud. And, you know, without it, it would not have been the same movie. You just, you know, that one iconic line. You know, you don't have Darren. So you don't have Fragile. It must be Italian. You don't have that. You don't have the Bumpus dogs with the old man. So there's a lot of things that are not available. You know, so you just kind of just try and find the things that work. And, you know, we did it. You know, it's, the whole thing has been very surreal, to say the least. You know, to come back and do something all these decades later that you did as a kid, and people just can't wait for it. They're salivating. They're sitting at the dinner table with the fork and the knife, and they're waiting for the food to hit the plate. And that's what this is, you know.
With about 4 minutes left here, movie making is a process. Was there anything cut out of the new film that you were upset about or just not happy that it was removed?
No, not that I know of. You know, not really. You know, most of everything we shot is up there. You know, they kept it pretty tight. They really did. They didn't just, you know, go on and shoot this or shoot that. They knew what they wanted to do as opposed to just kind of throwing something together. They had a game plan, and, you know, it's all there. I mean, even so much like this, there's a new character. He's at the bar. His name's Larry. And when we originally read it, we're like, who's this Larry guy, you know? But then the actor, who's from England, I mean, he's great. We were laughing our behinds off at this guy, going, oh, yeah, this is terrific. You know, so even the few new characters that they added in, you know, really, really added to the film and added to the quality of it. So there's not much, unlike the first one where they had the Flash Gordon scene with Ming the Merciless, and Ralphie saves the family, and they cut it out, and it hit the floor, and they never saved it. So the footage doesn't exist.
How would you like to be remembered when you're a part of a movie like this and this sequel? How do you want people at Christmas time, when these movies are played, to remember you and this character, which is beloved?
Just that I bring a smile to their face. That they love what I did. They smile. They laugh. You know, I mean, I get a triple dog dare you all the time still. All these years later, people say it to me. You know, as if I haven't heard it before, you know. You want to leave behind something that moves people emotionally, be it a laugh, a cry, whatever it is. And I've moved them in a smiling way, in a laughing way, in a... you know, enjoyable way. You know, I mean, I'm not going to last forever. Nobody does. But if they see something from the film or they see the toy or whatever it is, they smile. I remember this. Oh my God, this was great. I love this. I did my job. You know, and you leave behind the legacy of bringing joy and laughter and enjoyment and good memories to people. That's really what any actor wants.
And we do want to remind people that A Christmas Story Christmas is now available on HBO Max. And pay attention, because it's going to be available other places during the Christmas season. So you'll want to keep a close eye on that. And of course, the original 1983 classic, A Christmas Story, is going to be on marathons, so on and so forth, other places during the holiday season. You can't help but see this movie and enjoy this movie. It has become a Christmas classic, and hopefully the new one will be right there with it every single year from here on out. The guest has been Scott Schwartz, Flick from both of those incredible films, and of course we remember him so well from the hit movie The Toy with Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor. Scott, I know you're out there on the West Coast, and getting up with us early the day after the release of this means so much to me and so much to the audience. Thank you so much.
And thank you, everybody. Have a happy holiday season, and stay healthy and well, and enjoy the new movie, Christmas Story Christmas. I think you're going to love it.
Thanks, Scott. Bye-bye. Hey, there you go. There's a little Christmas cheer for you a little early before Thanksgiving. We'll be back 15 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio.
I'm Charlie Everson. I'll be on 10 till 12 today, and welcome your phone calls. Today, I'm going to leave it up to all of you to